Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello, it's Rich Gassaway, host of the Leaders Toolbox on Firehouse.com. We are at the Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, Maryland, and we are hosting a panel of representatives of the Volunteer and Combination Officer Section of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. And we're here today to talk about some challenging issues facing volunteer and combination fire departments across America. We have a pretty distinguished panel today, and I'm happy to be part of the podcast serving as the moderator. We have Chief Tim Wall, the chief of the North Farms Volunteer Fire Department, and he is the chairman of the Volunteer and Combination Officer Section. We have Chief William R. Ball of the Williamsport, Maryland Fire Department, Chief Mike Lee of the Lincolnton, North Carolina Fire Department, and recently retired Chief David C. of the Salisbury Fire Department, and now with the Delmar, Delaware Volunteer Fire Department. And David C. is also a board member of the Volunteer and Combination Officer Section. So I'd like to welcome our panel, and we will jump right into the first question, which is one that I'm sure is on many people's minds across the fire service today. And it's, how is the economy affecting your department, and then maybe on a broader scale, your community, and then maybe for the VCOS board members, the broader community of the Volunteer and Combination Fire Service? So how is the economy affecting you?
Hi, this is Tim Wall, and I'll take that first question. Rich, I think it's we haven't seen how it's affecting us. I think we're anticipating certain ways and things are going to go. I believe with July 1st coming apart, a lot of fire departments were looking through concessions from membership to maybe balance their budget for this coming fiscal year, along with some chief officers making some decisions on maybe participating or attending various educational opportunities. I believe a lot of people forecasted that the economics were going to be very tough, and if you use the term strategically plan, met and talk with the elected officials, the chief officers, along with the membership, and said, we're in this together, and if we don't do some things now and be proactive, the possibility of, from one extreme to the other, would it be taking blackouts on some fire apparatus? Would it be laying some people off? And I think that will be the key in another year or 6 months into your budget. Hopefully everyone sat down, strategically planned, and worked out a way to, let's not let that happen, and how do we be creative? A new challenge to the chief officer today is, how do we mingle, how do we get things done, and how do we provide our service to the public?
Rich, this is Mike Lee. I agree with what Tim has said. This year's budget for the small municipality that I work for is not significantly impacted. We're concerned what's going to happen within the next 12 months, though. The way things are looking in the North Carolina area, next year might hit us even harder than this year. And then we are going to have to make some decisions. This year, I didn't put anything in the capital budget. I cut my budget by 2%. Not because I was asked to, but because I knew the financial situation of the city. All the departments had to work together, and I thought I could do that without losing service to the citizens, which is the number one concern we have. So, again, right now it's not affecting us too much. We've got no capital expenditures planned, but we're concerned what's going to happen next year if the economy doesn't turn around in the near future. Thank you.
Hi, Rich. Will Ball, Williamsport, Maryland. And one of the biggest concerns that we have is it's starting to affect some of our individual households. Being an all-volunteer department with a combination department with career EMS on board, when we look at our annual fund drives and subscription services that we have, our EMS subscription area is a little greater square mileage area than our fire, but we're both of those were off almost $20,000 compared to previous years. And when you're trying to use some of that money to supplement other funds that come into your department, you're looking at $40,000 between two divisions of a department that runs 2,000 calls a year. That's an apparatus payment. So we have to, we've begun to seriously look at some cost reductions. How do we strategically plan for these capital ventures a little bit differently than we would in, previously being the way our department is managed. And our board of directors is, you know, restricted a lot of the our purchases, knowing that we're going to have to buy an engine here within the next 6 to 7 months. And we have a major station project that's hopefully going to be underway here September, October, depending if we're lucky enough to seek a economic stimulus award through the Assistance to Fire grant. But if we don't get that, that's really going to reorganize our entire, you know, financial planning part of that. And we've had to become a little bit more knowledgeable about the financial planning of it as just a volunteer department that's not under a municipal, reign. So we have to start getting creative in our funding sources and how that's going to affect the culture of our department. You know, it's yet to be foreseen.
Good afternoon, Rich. Dave C., Salisbury, and now Delmar. I guess I'm fortunate in the fact that I've been able to look at the economic situation from the perspective of two individual and totally different departments, the first being the municipal department that I worked for 30 years, combination organization. I crafted, prior to my retirement earlier this month, I crafted drafted the 2010 budget for the department. And during my tenure as chief, we continued to address firefighter safety issues through apparatus and tools and equipment replacement and facilities upgrade. And we were fortunate in the fact that the municipal government has put a lot of faith in the department's administration and really sunk a lot of money into that to the tune of about $18 million over 20 years. And while we were drafting the 2010 budget, the senior staff members and I talked about that we really didn't feel that we were going to feel the crunch of the economic situation in 2010, but in 2011 after is when it's really going to hit. And I think other departments within the city had that similar feeling and outlook on the economic situation down the road. The 2010 budget was subsequently passed, and in speaking with the acting chief of the department a few weeks ago, they cut a number of capital projects, some EMS unit replacements, staff cars, et cetera. And we had also, as a part of our 09 budget, had asked the city council at that time to for permission to move forward with drawing up plans for the reconstruction of our third fire station that's already in service. It's a building that was built back in the late 30s and is due to be replaced and is just inadequate for continued service for today's fire service. And the council, put that project on hold because of the looming economic downturn and the fact that they're just afraid money's not going to be there. And as I understand it, that project is going to be one of the projects that'll be, they're asking for the federal stimulus money. And also within the budget, the coming year's budget, some of the training and educational programs have been cut, which are by many politicians deemed to be, in our situation, were deemed to be non-essential. However, you know, from our perspective, those things are essential in order to enable and empower the troops to be able to provide the service that the citizen expects. So those types of things are going to impact service delivery down the road. From my volunteer department, I know in the meetings that I've attended in the last few months, the president and the treasurer both are asking members to be cognizant of the fact that funding is down, that we can't continue on the spending track that we've been able to do over the past few years. And of course, you know, most volunteer fire departments rely on heavily on donations and fundraisers. So I see it as each individual's economic situation is impacted, adversely impacted by less money. That means probably more fundraisers to make up for the fact that the people attending those fundraisers have less to spend at all of them. So you've got more fundraisers to make the same amount of money to run the organization, which means in turn more time for volunteers, less time for family. It just impacts the entire service. And I don't really, I agree, I don't think that we're going to see the full impetus of that impact until next year. And but it's good that the fire service is looking ahead and is planning for that impact, because the goal of the fire service is to continue to provide that same level of high quality service.
Thanks, guys. I heard a common theme that I tend to be optimistic in how I look at things, and even in adversity, I think there's opportunities. But I heard a common theme here that perhaps the worst is yet to come. And so in the nature of my design of trying to find the optimistic way to work through this, my next question, again, still ties to the economy. It's often been said recently that we need to learn how to do more with less. I have spoken rather heartily about how challenging, if not impossible, it is to do more with less. And in fact, if somebody wants that done, our response might be, I can do less with less, but I don't know if I can do more with less. However, I'm also knowing from my observations of fire departments out there that there is some inefficiencies about how some fire departments operate. In other words, they've done the same thing the same way for so long that it has become their habit for how they do it, and there might be ways to just tighten up the way they do their business, and especially in this tougher economy. So my question is really, and you can answer part of it or all of it, is what ideas or suggestions would you offer for departments about how to do more with less? Phrased another way, how could they become more efficient and still yet do all their services? The second part of the question is, how can they do less with less? In other words, if they had to look at how can they reduce what they do, what's a systematic way of looking about what to reduce and how to reduce? And then the third part is how to do more with more. And David, it kind of ties into something that you had said, is how could they generate the revenue needed to be able to continue to sustain the way they do things now, when maybe even grow their services coming into the years? Because there are businesses out there that are growing. I just saw on the front page of the USA Today newspaper this morning about Panera Bread, hiring employees, opening stores, defying the economy, and being successful at it. Applying that logic to the fire service, again, a three-part question. How do they do less with less? How do they accomplish it? How can they do more with less, be more efficient? How can they do more with more, generate some revenue that would help them be able to sustain themselves?
Rich, this is Mike Lee. I'd like to comment and maybe not answer your questions, but you bring some thoughts to my mind. And I jump in front of Tim maybe because before I lose my thought here, I can only speak for my department. I don't think that I can do much more for less, personally. I feel like I'm a grant writer. Over the last 6 months, I've written three grants, one for the new fire station grant, AFG grant, and I'm waiting on the SAFER grant to come out because I've been authorized to submit three personnel into the SAFER grant. The fire service has a history, I think, or we have touted that we do so much with so little. We've always been asked to do more and more and more, and we don't get any increased personnel. We don't get increased funds. We're asked to do something, we do it. My department's doing the car seat checks, which the police department started and then realized they didn't have the manpower or the money to do that. So it's come down to us, and we're doing that. We have to recertify our people, which is a cost. it takes manpower to do that. It's a very active program. It's a very worthwhile program. But that's something else that's been pushed down to us, and we've accepted it. Hydrant maintenance, I'm dealing with in my head right now. I'm new to this department. I've been there about a year, and they maintain the hydrants completely, all the way down to painting them. And I don't think it's a fireman's job to paint fire hydrants. They're not our fire hydrants. We just use them. They're maintained and put in by the water department. Personally, I don't think my department can do less with less. And again, I think we shouldn't be asked to. I realize what you're asking. There are departments out there that can, and they need to be looked at, but I just can't. Thanks, Rich.
Mike, this is Dave C. again. Most of my career, I heard that. Well, we've just got to do more with less. And sometimes I think we are our own worst enemy in that a new service comes along that needs to be done, and we're gung-ho. We're a gung-ho group of individuals who are willing to go the extra mile. I think we're our own worst enemy sometimes. I remember back in the late 90s when we accepted the responsibility for hazmat response in the city. And, yeah, we'll do that. We didn't have a plan. We didn't have resources. No training. Very little limited training. A few of us had gone to some detailed training. But we accepted that, and we did it. And I think the general public, has come to realize that when all else fails and there's nobody else to call for your specific problem, they call the fire department. Because in 3 to 5 minutes, there's going to be a shiny piece of apparatus with hopefully four guys on it, or gals, that are going to take care of your problem. And the public's come to expect that. And it's difficult to do more with less. And I know in my own department, we talked about this, and my deputy chief at the time mentioned to me and said to me, and said, Chief, you know what? There's going to come a time where we've just got to say we can't do that. And I think that time is closer than a lot of us realize, that we just can't do it all anymore. I don't know if privatization is the answer. I think getting back to the basics of what we do is paramount. I think that the fire service over the last decade has had to change its focus from fire-related and special ops-related or fire-related events to more EMS-focused, EMS-based, and special operations, special events. But there's a line that has to be drawn in the sand by fire service leaders, and I think that it's going to have to be drawn soon. Because as money gets tighter, it's going to be it's already extremely difficult to maintain what we have. Because, you know, we've seen it nationwide where they're closing fire stations. They're having fire station brownouts. Recently, there was a fire chief that lost his job because he stood up for what he believed in and couldn't and wouldn't cut his budget, which I think is unheard of. I don't know that anybody has any specific answer. I think it's based on what we know, our experiences, and what we think is best for the community. And I always fell back on what my beliefs were, which was, I'm here to serve the community. The city government gives me a certain amount of finite resources to do that job with, and it's my job and the administration of the fire department's job to manage and utilize those resources to the best of their ability to get the service and the job done for the community. And in my case, in our case, the community wasn't really screaming that they weren't getting the service. And I think that's probably the case nationwide. You know, the job's getting done in spite of the fact that the purse strings are being drawn tighter.
Thanks, David.
Will Ball, I agree with Chief C and Chief Lee there that we have to get we're already creative thinkers. If you give us a drum, we'll figure out how to make it a training aid. If you give us a bucket, we'll figure out how to fill it up with water to put the fire out. If we don't have any water, we'll get creative how to find the water. But all the brainstorming in the world isn't going to put the dollars into our budgets that we need. We have to do a better job at educating our political officials. In the county that I'm from in Maryland, our county commissioners are very responsive to our emergency services needs. We recently, in the last 18 months, had a county commissioner that came to every single fire station, presented some questions, and was out to get his own education because it wasn't being provided to him of why we need this money. We keep saying that we need this money. We have to do a better job at educating them and showing them the best value for their buck. Some of the suggestions for that you could look at is some bulk purchasing. There is some companies out there that when you're going to go buy a case of paper, you can maybe buy a skid of paper and divide it up amongst your departments. Protective clothing, possibly. Add-on contracts. You know, if you're required under your municipality to have a purchasing practice, you could possibly do add-on contracts that instead of having all the costs through your purchasing departments to do bid proposals and things like that, that you could find a bid to do add-on contracts. There is, again, creative ways of making that, but it all comes through education. Educating our citizens that, sure, when you're doing your company fund drive, you have to make sure it's attractive enough and simple enough for them to read. You know, we have to now become marketing directors of how we're going to do that. And Chief, I agree with you. I think since November of last year, between state grants, assistance to fire grants, and other things, you know, I've spent more time writing grants than I have responding to calls, and attending the training that I should be out there with our guys, you know, in the trenches doing that. But again, it comes back to education, educating our members of how we need to be financially responsible, educating our citizens that are true stakeholders. How do we convert that into them being stockholders into our companies, and how we make $10 of their donation work? Just knowing when to say when. The fire service and all of us as leaders here on this panel probably have a really hard time saying no when Mrs. Smith calls you and says, "Hey, can you come do this?" Well, what do? You get a group of guys out there and you help her out. But sometimes we just have to learn to say no, and that's unfortunate that we're saying no because of dollar signs, not because of what we're truly here to do, and that's our nature. Getting creative in generating revenue through different aspects is going to be difficult for your average volunteer fire department that we see in this country. Because I know in our area, we're a suburb of the Baltimore and Washington area, and we're becoming a more and more transient community, and they expect that tax dollar to be there. Well, we don't have a fire tax. We've asked for it, and our political officials have said no new taxes. And how do you generate $5 million to build a fire station without taxes and without being able to creatively float a bond because you're not a municipal department? And again, it's generating those new monies that just are not there. Less for less, it's not going to happen. Not in today's emergency services nationwide, volunteer career. Maybe travels and different things for some of the larger municipal departments can be one thing. Being able to afford to send people to a conference such as, you know, the Firehouse Expo, maybe instead of sending five, you can send three, and hopefully the three that come back are good educators and can make it a train-the-trainer program. Or having speakers come into your county to do different type of educational programs that how can you maximize the best bang for your buck, you know. Instead of sending 10 people to a conference for $3,000, you bring that speaker into your county or your community for the $3,000 to get the same education that five would get. And those are just the creative ways that we're going to have to do things.
Chief Wall?
Tim Wall with North Farms Volunteer Fire Department in Wallingford. Getting more information from my colleagues here, and this follows up just a conversation had last week at a Connecticut Fire Chiefs meeting. And this is the economic crisis, and trying to say the original question about is doing more with less. How do we keep giving our services to our town with less money, anticipating money? It's a challenge across the country that everyone faces. It's not just north, south, east, west. You know, I believe a majority of fire departments believe that if this economic crisis continues, how will it negatively affect your fire department? Here's a challenge for the chief officers, saying, you know, when does it tap into your morale? When does it tap into your response time? When does it tap into your volunteers giving their time? These are questions that I think are going to be coming down the road, or, you know, there's lights that we haven't seen yet that are going to be there. So as a chief officer facing these, you have to openly talk and discuss them. My colleagues here on the call here saying that, sure, we have to find ways to raise money. We talked about on the volunteer side, are you doing pancake breakfasts, ZD dinners? Are you doing door-to-door campaigns? Those have to increase, but that's more time. Another one talked about writing grants. Conversation I had with another fellow chief officer in Connecticut is that she called me and asked me, you know, where can we find money? Not just with the federal grants, but also educational opportunities. Reimburse your membership or your officers for taking certain classes. There's, you know, the National Fire Academy that has wonderful opportunities to better educate your members or your fellow officers. But also you have to say, you know, morale. What are you going to do? You know, that's a challenge with the fire chief who's sitting in the number one car. Also, discussion with, okay, hopefully through your fire department and working with your elected officials, your chief officers, and your membership, you have some type of plan. And I'll just talk about maybe a vehicle replacement plan. Maybe last year and this year, that's been thrown out the door for a variety of reasons. So how do you catch up in 2 years? You know, what do you start planning for 3 years out? And that ties in your morale. That ties in the firefighters or EMS see what the chief is doing. Are the elected officials getting along with the chief? That's where I believe with you open it up. You have an open discussion. You know, what's out there? What do you want to gain? What do you want to lose? Is the right time to purchase a new vehicle? Maybe you didn't do it before. Do you start talking about bonding a firehouse? Be creative. And maybe that's a challenge for today's fire chief, that in that sense, maybe you can't do that type of business the way you've always been doing. You know, the fire chief has to be more creative, find ways to find income. But also, as we know with some grants, there's a catch. It may help you for 4 years or 5 years. So you have to pre-plan that out. You know, what's the demographics of your community? You know, Is it growing? And that's in your strategic planning, that's getting everybody involved, from your elected officials, from maybe leaders in your town, to say, hey, if this keep continuing, we have to look of ways to go from a volunteer to a combination, go from a combination to supply more staffing or helpers or workers, whatever you may need. So I think that's another one, as we talked about, that maybe we haven't fully seen the impact of the economy this year. It's what's 2010, 2011 looking like?
Well, Chief Wall, you brought it up, so I'm going to run with it. You mentioned several times the issue of firefighter morale, and we're talking about the economy and cuts and more with less or less with less. What are your thoughts about how to maintain firefighter morale in the coming 1 to 3 years as we ask them to do more with less, to give more of their time, to work harder with less resources, less equipment, maybe less staffing, older equipment, not the latest and greatest technology. That's the more with less. Or how do we engage them in the process of figuring out how to do less with less? What to cut, where to cut, how to cut. Chief C said, you know, the fire service is great. If something needs to be done, we find a way to do it. And I think we have thrived with that mindset. Give us a challenge and we'll find a way to do it. But what do we do now when the challenge is we have to find a way to do less? We have to find a way to not provide the same level of service. And you're seeing the morale issues of brownouts and layoffs. you know, Chief Lee, you guys took on the car seat safety program because the police couldn't do it anymore. What happens when you say to the firefighters, we can't do it anymore either? Something has to give. You know, at some point, something has to give. And that's the less with less. So the question, rephrasing it, is what can we do to maintain the morale of our firefighters as we ask them to work harder than they currently are or ever have? Or how we can get them to buy into and accept that we're not going to be able to do as much as we've done in the past?
That's a loaded question. This is Dave C. That's a loaded question. And one of my, I won't call it a failure, but one of the things that I don't feel I did as well a job as I maybe could have done or wish I could have done was the topic of morale, firefighter morale. When I joined the municipal department back in the late 70s, early 80s, we were on old apparatus, working out of old stations, wearing old equipment that by today's standards, we would have junked a long time ago. And as I progressed through the organization, it was my desire that people in the organization weren't subjected to those types of things in the future. And once I achieved the rank of chief, fire chief, you know, we put together a plan for apparatus replacement. We put together a plan to replace personal protective equipment. We put together plans to add additional staffing, which in some years we were successful with staffing. Others we were not. One of my goals was to meet the nationally accepted standard of four-man engine companies. We didn't meet that goal either. And in all of these things, you know, providing today's firefighter with the state-of-the-art equipment, state-of-the-art tools and apparatus that they needed to safely and efficiently and effectively do their job just didn't seem to be enough in some cases. There was always the, well, gee, wish we had this, wish we had that, or how come we can't go up there and get more people? And I really believe that the people coming into the fire service really think that it is all about just going up to the mayor or to the council or the commissioners and saying, well, we need 25 more firefighters. And they don't really think about the financial impact that it's going to be on the entire system or the community. And they think it's just as easy as walking in there and here's my list of things that I need, and we want it yesterday. And it's not that easy at all, as these chiefs will attest. I'm not sure, other than trying to explain to those members the system, the processes, and typically the new frontline firefighter really doesn't care how the new apparatus got to the firehouse or how the new fire station got built or the numerous hours of meetings that the senior staff members had to participate in to get the council members and the public, the various groups in the public, to understand and support the projects. They just know that they want a new fire engine and they need it and want it yesterday. And other than to educate them and get them to understand and eventually buy into the fact, well, yeah, that's the system, that's the process, that's how we get things. And really, as a young firefighter, I didn't care about how we got those things either. Even in the volunteer service, wasn't worried about the business side whatsoever, where the money came from to put gas in the tanks, where the money came from to buy new gear. All I knew was I was going to ride fire apparatus. But I think as we age, as we get older, I think those members, the new younger members of the organizations, we'll begin to understand, yeah, there's more to it than just buying the new stuff, putting it in service. That's the best answer I have, is just continually promote, work with, and explain, answer their questions when they're asked, and try your best to get them to understand that it is an uphill struggle and it is an uphill battle.
Rich, it's Mike Lee. I think I'm still on the honeymoon last 12 months of the new department.
It'll be over soon enough.
Yeah. And I don't have as many career people as Dave managed. I have 22. But it has been my goal to keep them well informed of what's going on. And they seem to really have accepted it. I think their morale is fine at this point. They're used to getting at least a 2.5% cost of living raise. They didn't get that this year. There was no complaints whatsoever because they knew what the economy was. They knew, like Dave said, education. But if you've got a 500-man department, it's kind of hard to reach each person, whereas I can personally touch all 22. So I think education, openness, knowledge is the best thing. I don't blame the city for it. I don't blame the city manager for it. I just tell them the facts. There's no money. They raised water and sewer rates in the city. Obviously, if they had to do that, they can't afford to give raises. So I agree with Dave. I think it's easier for me, so I can't speak for the larger departments. But keep things open, honest, and as much as you can, let the people know. And I think their morale will follow.
I want to interject one thing there, and then I'll let Chief Ball and Chief Wall speak. You talk about the firefighter morale. You know, how do you manage through, you know, the firefighters being told, sorry, you're not going to get a pay raise this year, but the Parks and Recreation Department gets to plant new flowers all along the boulevard this year and replace all the fencing around the baseball fields. In other words, the fire department was the stepchild in the budget.
We're not going to make everybody happy. We all know that. We're not going to make all the firemen happy, all the employees. But they've got to understand that the cost behind the employee, that is the cost of the city, the employee, the salaries, the benefits. And that's the difference. You've heard that. Well, they can buy a fire truck, but they can't give us a raise. Well, that fire truck's going to be paid off or maybe paid in cash. That salary's going to go on and grow and continue. It's a liability that they've got to keep with. I think that's the difference. Education. Are they going to accept it? Not all the time, but that's all you can do.
For Will Ball, for our small community, the mayor called me about May, and the town of Williamsport does contribute to the fire department. They provide a fund for the department to purchase equipment, daily operational expenses. But there's a cap. It's not that's a $25,000-$30,000 fund for us to do that. And we're received in the budget the same way as the United Way or the local baseball league is. Do we fund it a little bit more than them? Yes. However, when the mayor called me and said, hey, if I had to cut your budget $3,000 from your EMS and $3,000 from fire, what would that do to you? And I began to explain to him a little bit, and he said, wow, I didn't realize that $6,000 could impact you and your department that much. I said, yeah, that's our EMS operations equipment budget for Band-Aids and 4x4s and things and replacement batteries for life packs and along those lines. And he was pretty surprised at that, and I was able to establish that relationship with him previously by taking him, as we did purchase a new fire truck, took him to the plant with us to show him how the grant dollars worked and how his money is going to put from our town budget put the equipment on that fire truck. So it was a good education for him, but it made him start to think a little differently of how he could support the Little League and a couple of the activities from the general fund, how maybe he'd be able to generate new monies. And he was able to do that and then be able to restore our budget to whole, which we're very thankful for because of, having to reduce our budget at the department level. And, that's one thing that you can walk into the vendor and say, you know, bill it to the town, and here's the PO number. We don't have to write the checks or anything like that. It's just as long as we're accountable and it's budgeted. Morale to our organization, as you know, with any volunteer fire department, that's the struggle as it is. You know, how many T-shirts can you buy and jackets and banquets and dinners that you have for them? Those are all great things to do. But what happens if that's cut? Does it mean they're not going to show up for Monday night training? We hope not, you know, but depends on the culture that you've built within your organization. One of the things the president and I of our organization has talked about is greater ownership. Several years ago, we stopped having our weekly bingo night. Why? Because it wasn't making the money that the effort that was being put forth. And it really didn't over, not having that money didn't overly affect our general operation because we were able to show that. But one of the volunteers said, well, let's start having bingo again. And she has seen the guys that have been around there for 20 years and say, you don't understand that, do you? Of the commitment to that single fundraiser per week by about a dozen people that it takes. You know, even though it's a four-hour evening, but in the state of Maryland, we're able to have, you know, some type of gaming with tip jars, and which is a great revenue for us. However, somebody has to buy them, inventory them, and we have to maintain them by our state laws. That's manpower. That means somebody might not be doing something else for the organization. But ownership is the word that he and I are going to try to promote. That in February, our organization adopted a $1.8 million apparatus replacement plan. The board of directors charged the line officers to develop a 10-year apparatus replacement plan, and we came back with 5 years. And they were like, we told you 10, and I was like, I know, but we can't project out that far of our service delivery levels, the way things are going to change, and what we're thinking, the same as the other panelists are saying, 2011 and 12. You know, if our donations for our fund drive drop any further than what they are, you know, we're going to have to start thinking differently of how, or instead of doing a mailer, are we going to have to start physically knocking on the door and having the boot drive, you know? At the local convenience store, every time somebody pulls in, and instead of getting the change for the Christmas thing for kids, are we going to be in competition for that? And that's not right, because that's taking away from something else. But ownership. We're planning on reducing a pumper and a rescue squad and building a heavy-duty rescue engine to consolidate our apparatus, reduce maintenance costs, and could show the savings. The president came to me and said, until we know what this building project's going to go, I have to, you know, I respectfully ask you to kind of back your apparatus committee that's been working very diligently, back them up a little bit. Well, that affects your morale because they got a lot of hard work. You have to respect the hard work that they did, and you have to tell them that there's a light at the end of their tunnel for their hard work, but, you know, they have a mission, they have a plan, you know, they have a project charter that they want to live up to, but, you know, when they're stalled in their footsteps, it does create morale, and that's where we had to come up with this ownership, you know, the pride, the morale of the department that, okay, you want this new pumper, new rescue engine, all new equipment for it, well, guys, we're going to have to take ownership of that. And I remember one of the proudest moments of my 20 years in that department is when our older treasurer stood up at our annual banquet, and we were able to pay our 1990 ladder truck off in five years. And, you know, and in 1996, we had bought a new pumper tanker, and we wanted to pay it off in 5 years. But you know what? With all the other things that were happening, it did take us 10 years. And, you know, there's not as much. I look at both of those rigs in our station, and I'm proud of both of them, but I know that by working the bingos and the pancake breakfast and the spaghetti feeds that I really was a part of the payoff of that ladder truck as a volunteer. And I have a little different sense of ownership than I did with that other unit. And, you know, that may be a little weird thinking, but, you know, in today's volunteers, we don't have that. We're not cultivating that behavior out of them that we have to strive for, to go out and buy that Nomex hood. You know, I can remember the day that the chief would come to a membership meeting and asked for permission to go buy 5 Nomex hoods. And the people that got the Nomex hoods were the 5 structural firefighters. They were kind of issued out. And Rich, you can probably remember our days in West Virginia when we joined a department and was issued a 40-inch long coat, hip boots, and an MSA plastic helmet. And the first 5 sets of bunker pants that were purchased, that was a big cultural change for our department. But it took our chief to spend that money to do that. And I would hate to see that our organizations nationwide have grown to being financially responsible to have to go back to determining how many hoods they're going to have to buy and who's going to get them, because that's going to affect our organizations even greater. And that's safety, and we're starting to affect that.
I don't want to have 2 important things that you said lost and all that you had to offer there, Chief Ball. You mentioned 2 things about doing more with less that I wanted to make sure I captured, and that is you stopped doing bingo because of the time commitment and the marginal revenue, and you did a 2-for-1 apparatus replacement, which was actually a downsizing in the fleet, which creates some efficiencies unto itself. So for the listeners, there's 2 examples of that doing more with less. I'm going to turn it over now to Chief Wall and let him talk about his take on the firefighter morale.
Thank you, Chief Gassaway. And what I'm going to do is just maybe put a different spin. I think we got kind of hooked up on money, which is very important to morale. But I would like to offer, you introduced us earlier on the panel today, you have 3 members of the VCOS Board of Directors. And I'd just like to have our listeners maybe be creative on how they can maybe improve their morale, but also they can look out to do some things. And picking up what Chief Ball said, greater ownership in your department. And I can tell you of what I know based in Wallingford. And once a year we do a ceremony where we actually swear in the new recruits who just graduated from Fire One. And over the past several years of doing that, I've seen it improve from the aspects of attendance, from the existing volunteers being involved, their family, to the new recruits coming through the door, and you know, now they're in a shirt, they're in a polo shirt with their department, they're starting to wear it with pride, and a morale boosting, morale that you're marketing or you're perceiving an image for your morale of your fire department that you want other people to, I'd like to join that department. I'd like to join the fire service. And that can take you around to another topic that we can spend 2 days talking about, retention and recruiting. But as far as the morale, there's some things that the VCOS offers, the Volunteer Combination Office section of the IFC, and I picked up one earlier today just by attending Firehouse Expo, is the Heart and Healthy program, or the Heart and Healthy Week that the National Volunteer Fire Council is promoting. Back to the VCOS, we decided to be creative by the Board of Directors leadership, and we've offered scholarships. Now, this goes back to morale. You may be able not to send 4 or 5 people to a conference, but here's a way of being creative that you apply for a scholarship. We've offered 2 scholarships for FRI attendance. That's the Fire Rescue International for the IAFC. We've also worked with 2 of wonderful supporters for the fire service, known as Provident Insurance and VFIS, where we offer awards and recognize either a leadership role in your fire department for your chief, if you choose to nominate him or her for the John M. Buckman III Leadership Award. That winner has an opportunity to attend the VCOS Symposium, which is held in November. We've also worked with another fine distinguished company that's very good to the fire service, VFIS. And the Board of Directors got creative in working with these partners and these companies to saying, how do we make us safer? How do we make our department safer? And that's the buy-in. That's going back to the greater ownership in the department and saying, we do have a great safe operation program. We do teach. We do want to. We instruct Officers make a stance. We wear your seatbelt. We enforce how you back up your apparatus. Share those programs and tell them. And that's if you nominate your department, I'm not sure. I'm taking another spin on the morale. We're saying, oh, our department, ownership. It was not just the chief. It was not just the officers. The group got together and we put in for this award. And we, and you know, through the appreciation of the company and the, with the VCOS, you have an opportunity again to attend the VCOS symposium in November. VCOS board of directors also want to share with the fire service retention and recruitment programs. You know, we want to know what you're doing in your department. We want to know what you're doing in your state, because in a way of nominating your department, there's that morale. There's the saying, hey, we are doing some things good. We should tell other people and take pride when the stamp or they see the seal of your fire department, and you're sharing that with the fire service. It's going back to greater ownership. It's the morale. Let's not get hung up, and it's not negative saying this. Okay, we know we didn't get a pay raise this year, but let's not get down in the dump what we do every day. Let's be proud that we get on the rig. We're properly trained. We take great pride in the ownership of our department. You know, we wear our patch. We have a job to do. You take an oath, whether you're paid, volunteer, on call, you have a responsibility. But here's a way, I'm just trying to take a spin on the morale. Here's some opportunities that are out there that I know of. I mean, also the IAFC Foundation, they have an educational opportunity where you can apply for assistance or receive some tuition back for taking some classes. Look at the NVFC program on the National Firefighters Health Week, where they're giving you a program that you can do to improve your department, maybe on the morale side, but also help your firefighters. So you look at their health. It's how do they stay healthier. Then you have to worry about your morale, and this person got out for whatever reason. But also it keeps, whether you have 10 firefighters or you have 220 firefighters, everyone's very important. And that's maybe your role as a chief officer. He or she can look at and say, let's look at these. Money may not be tied to them, but I think a long way with the morale may help, because you see your fire department saying, I'm proud of what we do for the health of our fire department. I'm proud that we got nominated for an award for maybe safe apparatus movement. I mean, again, Chief Gassaway, that's a conversation we can have for 3 hours about safety and health. And but here's right at your fingertips by websites that maybe you can go in, do a little research, and adopt it into your everyday discussions. Again, I can tell you what's done in my area, or talk with other fire chiefs in the area. You know, you call them, you know, tailboard discussions in the morning over a cup of coffee, or even before you punch out from your 6 o'clock shift, you just take 3 minutes and you just talk about things that are going on. What's the health environment? What's the safety environment? You know, you read about this, because we have to find value in leadership, education, and service. And we have to look outside our box. We have to look outside our community. We have to talk with our mutual aid friends. We have to start expanding ourselves. And that goes to, you know, maybe a lead-in question, Chief Gassaway, about, you know, what's the effect of attending conferences and seminars and things for the future in the fire service?
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back to the VCOS roundtable discussion podcast at the Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, Maryland.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, thanks to the panel for the input and feedback on morale, and to Chief Wall for sharing with us some of the perspectives of the VCOS's leadership role in the fire service and some of the things that they can do to help maintain and improve firefighter morale. Our last question is going to do with how to go about making creative training opportunities for your firefighters to make sure that they are staying up to date and on the cutting edge. We have about 10 minutes, so I'm going to ask the presenters to be brief as they share with us some of their ideas for how to create creative training opportunities for their firefighters.
Dave C. again from Salisbury, Maryland. Personal experience, we just opened a $10 million fire station last in May of 08. During the construction, we had an engine go out of service, lost the engine. It was an older engine that due to be replaced anyway. Sat at our old training facility for 5 or 6 months. The new station combined our training center, maintenance and supply into a fire station and an admin building. The old fire engine didn't bring any money, scrap metal. One of our assistant fire chiefs suggested, well, you know what? Why don't we use it for training? So they took the thing, broke the thing in half, took the engine, the pump panel, and the hose bed. Before the roof of the new station was in place, they put the cab of the engine, the hose bed of the engine, on a mezzanine level that was originally designed for training anyway, along with the box of an old ambulance that had served as a dive unit. Today, those three pieces of equipment are serving the department membership and other departments who wish to come and participate. The ambulance body is used for EMS personnel to practice mega codes in the environment that they would be in on the street. The engine is still a project in progress. The future for that will be that there will be a computerized system connected so that the driver operator and the fire officer can interact with what they see on a projection screen in front of them. The hose bed, I believe, is currently in service training our fourth recruit volunteer class to load, unload hose bed and pre-connected hand lines and how to properly mount and dismount or move and remove ladders from the vehicle. The other area, some of our more creative carpenters in the department built an NSEBA breathing apparatus maze, training maze, similar to what's used nationwide to practice confidence and skills when using breathing apparatus. So I think that was very creative thinking on the part of some of our folks. Opportunities in addition to that abound elsewhere.
Sure. Thank you. Someone else briefly on creative training?
Will Ball. We've been very fortunate. A lot of the makeup of our volunteers in our organization are career firefighters with other departments and other counties in our area where they've seen the creativity that is done within their county educational programs, and then that they're able to extend those out to us in the volunteer tier system. Two sheets of plywood, a couple 4x4s, going to an electrician and saying, hey, for the next couple months, can you throw all your scrap wiring to us? And we were able to build an entanglement box for less than $100. Again, our crafty firefighters were able to put that together. We have an acquired structure that we really don't plan on burning, but we have it for about 9 months from a developer. And we've been able to insert those boxes into the house as they're crawling through the house and doing different things that they're forced to crawl through that box. So I guess it's a little bit more for less at a dollar value. And again, one of our biggest advantages is being volunteers, having those career firefighters out there that are able to bring in those training ideas that they get out of their own academies and how we can do that in our station. We have in our county, we're waiting for the development of our county training center. We're hoping that's going to happen, and we already have that ambulance sitting in our parking lot waiting to be inserted into that. But one of the best things that you could do is get online and find the different creative training networks for your volunteer department. Hopefully there is enough fire stations out there in the country that have the internet that can do that. So,
okay. Rich, this is Mike Lee. I just want to give a plug to the National Fire Academy for about $240, you can send a man up there for two weeks to get some of the best training in this country, I believe. That doesn't include transportation, but the academy will reimburse you for that also. So for $240 for 2 weeks, you get some top-notch training, and I think it's a resource that's going unused a great amount of the time. Thanks. Tim?
Rich, Tim Wall closing up, but just I'd say networking with your maybe mutual aid department, starting to do some things together, whether it's, for discussion, tanker shuttles. Reach out to your surrounding towns and, you know, maybe capitalize on those. Maybe start discussing EMS, EMT classes together. Also, maybe a Firefighter 1. You share the instructors, share the structure. Instead of all trying to do one, reach out, talk to your fellow chief officers or firefighters, and maybe it'll come grassroots. The firefighters, you know, getting back to that phrase, greater ownership in your department. The firefighters may bring it up to the chief and say, hey, what about doing this way? What about trying it that way? If you don't try something, you don't know how successful you're going to be. And thank you for the opportunity being on today's podcast.
Okay. Well, thanks to all the panelists for the gift of your time, for our audience, for sitting in and listening in on the live recording of the Leadership Roundtable at the Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. And our panel were representing the volunteer and combination officers of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, and thank them for their leadership, and thanks to Firehouse and Firehouse.com for allowing us to participate in a roundtable format like this.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.